you. You're driving me crazy. What did I do? What did I do? My tears for you make everything hazy, clouding those skies of blue. How dear were the friends who were near me to cheer me. Believe me, they knew that you.
I'm Leonard Lope. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. What you noticed first about Barbara Carroll when she's seated at the piano is her smile. She seems excited to be there. But it's a place she should feel quite comfortable at by now. During a career that spans over 50 years, she has jammed with the likes of Charlie Parker and Stan Getz and can include Frank Sinatra, Lena Horne, Tony Bennett, and Dinah Washington among her admirers. These days, she is playing an open-ended gig at the Algonquin Hotel's Oak Room on Sundays at 2 and 8 p.m., and she has a new recording, Barbara at Birdland, all of which gives me a chance to catch up with her today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
Do you feel the Algonquin is a good place to play this kind of music?
I feel it's a perfect place to play this kind of music. It's intimate. It's so comfortable to be there. I just adore it. And, of course, the hotel has such history associated with it that makes me feel good just to walk into the lobby.
You even do a couple of songs with lyrics by Dorothy Parker.
I do. You know, I didn't know until a couple of years ago that Dorothy Parker had written lyrics for songs. But I remember hearing these songs that I do recorded by Billie Holiday many years ago. One was Oh, How Am I to Know, which has music by Jack King. And the other is Wished on the Moon, which has music by Ralph Ranger. But when I heard Billie Holiday, Billie Holiday's records of these songs, I never knew that the lyrics were by Dorothy Parker.
And now you might even feel that she's in the room with you on all of those ghosts of the Algonquin Round Table.
You know, it's interesting that you should say that, because believe me, sometimes when I'm playing there, I do feel the spirit of Miss Parker in those walls and all those fabulous, brilliant lunchers who congregated there every day to trade witticisms and have a little lunch. And, of course, they were the Algonquin Round Table, or the Vicious Circle, as they were known.
But when you began performing in New York, it was a very different kind of a scene. Nobody would have performed at the Algonquin. It was 52nd Street, wasn't it?
Well, I came to New York at the end of the 52nd Street era, but I was fortunate that I got here before 52nd Street was finished. You see, by the early 1950s, it was all over. But when I got here, you could go to 52nd Street on any given night and hear Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, Art Tatum, Billie Holiday, Dizzy Gillespie, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was just heaven.
Just walk down the street and
just
walk into different
clubs. Just walk
down
the street. One club, the Three Deuces, the Onyx Club, the Downbeat Club, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it was just fabulous. And, of course, I felt as if I was in heaven, because there I was in New York City, surrounded by the music, the musicians, the singers that I absolutely idolized.
Well, during the swing era, and especially during World War II, there were a lot of women who were playing jazz. But when modern jazz came in, I can't think of any women except vocalists who were prominent. Was there discrimination against women? What was it like for you?
Well, you know, when I began playing, I was so immersed in the music. I wanted to play so very much that I never thought about the fact that it would be difficult for me because I was female. So that didn't occur to me, and I went blindly straight ahead, not realizing that there was discrimination. Of course there was. But, you know, it's interesting because musicians are very tolerant people. So you sort of had to prove yourself to the musicians, you know. If they felt that you could play, then it was okay for the chick piano player to sit in, you know, that kind of thing.
She plays as good as a guy.
Well, that's what they used to say. Gee, you play like a man, or you play good for a girl.
At the same time, it had to be a bit intimidating to find yourself playing at the same club that Art Tatum was playing at.
That happened to me one time. The first time I played at the Embers, which was a marvelous club on East 54th Street in New York City. They always had two attractions there, and I was there with my trio, and we were supposed to work opposite Art Tatum. Well, you know, that was like appearing opposite God.
Fats Waller called him God. He said, God is in the house when Art Tatum showed up.
Absolutely. So, you know, Art Tatum would play his absolutely fabulous set, and I would have to go on and play after him. You can imagine what that was like, but he was very, very, very encouraging and very sweet to me. I must say it was an experience I'll never forget.
I understand another time you were at a New Year's Eve party, and it was Count Basie and Dave Brubeck.
That was a great party. That was a party held at Dorothy Kilgallen's home. In one room, they had the Dave Brubeck Quartet. In another room, they had Count Basie with a five-piece band. And I was in the library with my trio. Well, you know, it doesn't get much more exciting than that. But the high point of the evening for me was about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Judy Garland came in and sat on the piano bench and sang. I will never forget that. And she sang, you know, The Man That Got Away and Over the Rainbow and all those. I couldn't believe that she was sitting there next to me. It was really thrilling.
Well, the songs from The Wizard of Oz were written by Harold Arlen, who was a friend of yours. And we're celebrating his centennial year, aren't we?
Yes, coming up.
Next year.
2005. As a matter of fact, when I go back to the Algonquin on January 30th, I'm going to be doing part of the show is going to be a tribute to Harold Arlen. Because of the fact that he was born 100 years ago. I did know him. And once I was really excited because he was about to record his first vocal. He was a marvelous singer. I must say that he sang better than most of the singers he wrote for. He had sort of a cantorial style because his father was a cantor. And also Harold was very influenced by blues and music such as Count Basie's band and the old Lunsford band, and he loved jazz. So it was a combination of those two influences that made him the spectacular singer that he was.
He wrote two standards that have the word blues in the title, Blues in the Night, and I Got a Right to Sing the Blues.
You bet.
And, not bad.
And a lot of other songs that he wrote were very blues-influenced.
Stormy Weather, he wrote Stormy Weather.
Absolutely.
And that old Black Magic and The Man That Got Away. And one of the ones that always stuns me is he wrote Get Happy, which is, I always think of as being from a very different kind of mindset.
But you see how monumental his talent was, that he was able to do both. He was able to write happy songs and blues songs and torch songs. And he was just fabulous. And I was privileged to know him, and as I said, he was going to record an album. In those days, they were albums, not CDs, and he wanted to sort of do a demo of what he was going to record before the actual recording session. So he asked me to go into the studio and play for him while he recorded these songs. Well, you know, there's nothing more intimidating than playing a composer's songs for the composer. So I was really scared, but I did it, and it came out pretty well. And what a thrill it was to hear him singing his own compositions.
Did it give you insight when you started singing later?
Oh, I think that he was probably an influence on me. I think everyone that you hear that you like is an influence on you.
My guest is Barbara Carroll, who's playing twice on Sundays at the Algonquin Hotel's Oak Room. That's at 59 West 44th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. A brunch show at 2 p.m. and a dinner show at 8 p.m. And she has a new recording called Barbara at Birdland, which was recorded live at another one of New York's wonderful jazz rooms. That's from Harbinger Records. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Well, today we think of you as a singer who accompanies herself. In fact, a profile in The Sun says legendary jazz songbird nests at Oak Room. But you didn't start singing until rather late in the career. You were a pianist. Were you inspired at all by Nat King Cole or people like that, or were you just who also started as a pianist and then started singing?
Exactly. You know, I love the word songbird applied to me because I consider myself a pianist who sings. You know, there is some sort of discrimination there, but
and you have a bass player, Jay Lenhart,
player
who sings.
Jay Lenhart is the best. He and I are working at the Algonquin, and we're having such a good time. He's a marvelous songwriter, as you know, a wonderful singer, so we really have a lot of fun. This CD was made at Birdland Live last year, and I had Jay Lenhart and a terrific drummer named Joe Cocuzzo. So it was a great thrill to do that record. And, you know, when you do something live, there is an element of spontaneity. There's a certain feeling that I love. I love live recordings. On the other hand, they're difficult in the sense that you can't improve them after you finish the recording as you can in the studio. You know, it's much more difficult to fool around with the record.
On the other hand, there are those nights, I'm sure, where you say to yourself, gee, I wish there was some recording equipment in this club right now because everything is just coming together.
Absolutely.
Or somebody comes and sits in with you and you say, oh my God, this is going to be lost. Only the people in this room even know about it.
It happens time and time again, but those are the chances you take with live performance.
So tell me how you got started. You probably, like everybody else, learned to play classical music first.
No.
No?
No. I got started because we had a piano at home. When I was about 5 years old, I gravitated to the piano, and I used to hear things on the radio and play them, and, you know, little compositions of my own. So I wanted to study, but I had two older sisters who had been given piano lessons and violin lessons and all kinds of lessons, and, you know, they didn't want to practice the usual routine. So my parents, I was a good deal younger than they, and my parents were very disenchanted with the idea of any more music lessons. So by the time I came along, they said, no, you know. So I sort of had to beg. But by the time I was 8 years old, they said, okay, you can study piano, and only if you practice and pay attention. Well, they didn't have to beg me to do that because I was so fascinated with the whole idea. And I began studying classical music when I was about 8. I studied maybe for 7 years or so. But meanwhile, in that period of time, I heard Nat Cole, and I heard Art Tatum and Teddy Wilson and those people, and it was as if a light went on, you know, because I said, aha, that's what I want to do.
And then when you reached the point where you were playing professionally, modern jazz was in effect, and you had assimilated all of those developments as well?
Well, then there were influences such as Thelonious Monk, Bud Powell, you know, all those wonderful pianists, and later on Oscar Peterson, Bill Evans. So there were many influences. My first influence was Nat Cole. When he was a pianist. When I heard Nat Cole play, that was really a very important moment in my life. And he was a brilliant pianist and, of course, a marvelous singer.
So how do you develop your own style after you hear all these other people?
Well, you just do what you feel, I suppose. What else can you do?
You also appeared on Broadway in Me and Juliet.
Oh, my. I was legitimate, yes.
That's Rodgers and Hammerstein. Mm-hmm. But how did you wind up singing? I know you quit the business for a while when you had a daughter. And then when you came back, you weren't playing jazz anymore, didn't you? Weren't you an accompanist for Rita Coolidge?
Oh, that was just for one record. That happened because my husband was the manager of Chris Christopherson and Rita Coolidge.
Who were married at the time.
They were married, yes. And Rita and I were very friendly, and so we used to fool around at home, and she would sing, and I taught her some songs, you know, some standard songs that she didn't know, because essentially she was singing country music at that time. She's a marvelous singer. So we made a record for A&M Records. I thought it was pretty good. They thought that it was too jazzy, that it was too jazz-influenced, and they never put it out. Many years later, it came out in Japan. So I guess it is around in some form or other.
If you can read Japanese, you probably will know exactly what was performed and who's on the record date. You do sound wonderful when you sing. So had you always sung, or is this something that you just fell into, like Nat King Cole?
I always knew a lot of lyrics. I always knew the words to everything, but I was afraid to sing because I felt I didn't have the vocal equipment and, you know, I couldn't sustain the notes properly, so forth and so on. So I didn't really begin singing until I began performing at the Bellman's Bar at the Carlisle.
Not the best room to perform in.
No, it was not. It had certain disadvantages, such as noise and smoke in those days. Everybody was smoking. But you see, I was playing solo piano there, and sometimes when you're a solo pianist, people come over to you and say, gee, do you know the words to that? Would you sing that? And so I got a lot of that kind of conversation and finally decided, why, I'll just give it a shot. You know, since I did know the words to everything, I was just chicken about doing it.
Well, you not only know the words, you know all the intros. You seem to be, you insist on doing the intro rather than just jumping into a song.
Oh, I think that really sets up the song, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, I do. And it's always, often it's wonderful to hear what the composer intended before we get into the more recognizable melody.
Well, actually, the verse of the song is sort of an explanation of what the song is about, you know. And I think it's very important to do that, give people an idea of what the song means.
What happens when you look out in the audience and you see a Frank Sinatra or a Billie Holiday? Does that make it a little scarier?
Sometimes, of course. Absolutely.
And that's
absolutely.
Or somebody like Tony Bennett.
Oh, Tony, dear Tony, is a good friend of mine, and occasionally he has come in to hear me at different places. He came to the Algonquin not so long ago, and he's gotten up to sing a song or two. And it's always a thrill. And, of course, the audience goes crazy.
How do you pick the songs that you do? You know, some of them are really well-known, but you always like a few less famous wonderful songs. I'm thinking of something like Dancing on the Ceiling by Rodgers and Hart.
Mm-hmm. I pick songs that I like, and that's the only criterion for my doing a song.
Is it the same every night?
No. Oh, gosh, no. I change songs all the time. I couldn't do the same show every night. That would be a big bore to me.
Although there are a lot of people who insist on that.
It's okay. I mean, if you have a set show and you do that, that's just fine. I don't work that way. I try to change very frequently.
You knew Harold Arlen, you said. Other composers as well?
My dear friend Cy Coleman, unfortunately,
He was here just a month before he died.
Really?
Yeah, he was right before he went into Feinstein's. And he was just so wonderful and so lively. It was stunned when I saw that he died.
He was so marvelous. You know, Bobby Short, after Cy died, Bobby Short sent me a photograph that was taken at Bobby's 80th birthday party at the Rainbow Room just about a month before Cy passed away. And I was thrilled to get it because Cy was one of my favorite people. I had known him for many years. I met him when I first came to New York. He had a trio. I had a trio. We played a lot of the same rooms. He was a fabulous, a really sensational pianist.
Barbara Carroll is playing on Sundays at the Algonquin Hotel's Oak Room at 59 West 44th Street, a brunch show at 2 p.m. and a dinner show at 8 p.m. For reservations, you can give them a call at 212-419-0331. There's also the new album called Barbara at Birdland. Live at Birdland from Harbinger Records. And we'll go out with a little bit from Do I Hear a Waltz. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.